This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Wei clicked his heels and marched back toward the door. Kai wanted to call him back immediately as a thousand questions filled his brain. He wanted the world to slow down and give him time to process this, but the two men had both gone before the hesitant wait fell from his mouth. The door shut, leaving him alone. He stole a single glance at Cinder's abandoned foot before collapsing over his desk and pressing his forehead onto the cool net screen. He couldn't help but imagine his father sitting at this desk, faced with this situation, and knew he would have been sending comms already, doing everything he could to find the girl and apprehend her, because that's what would be best for the Commonwealth. But Kai wasn't his father. He wasn't that selfish. Knowing it was wrong, he couldn't help but wish that wherever Cinder had gone, they would never find her. Chapter 8. The Morrells were all dead. Their farm had been deserted for 7 years, since both parents and a troop of 6 children had all been carted to the Toulouse plague quarantines during a single October, leaving behind a collection of rotting structures, the farmhouse, the barn, a chicken coop, along with 100 acres of crops left to fend for themselves, an arched storage building that had once housed tractors and hay bales remained intact, standing solitary in the midst of an overgrown grain field. An old dusty pillowcase, dyed black, still flapped off the house's front porch, warning neighbors to stay away from the diseased house. For many years it had done its job, until the ruffians who ran the fights had sought it out and claimed it for their own. The fights were already underway when Scarlett arrived. She sent a hasty comm to the Toulouse Police Department from her ship, figuring she had at least 20 to 30 minutes before they responded, useless as they were. Just enough time to get the information she needed before Wolf and the rest of society's outcasts were taken into custody. Downing a few breaths of chilled night air that did nothing to settle her rapid-fire heartbeat, she marched into the abandoned storage building. A writhing crowd shouted up at a hastily constructed stage, where one man was beating his opponent in the face, fist flying over and over with sickening steadfastness. Blood started to leak from his opponent's nose. The crowd roared, egging on the dominating fighter. Scarlett skirted around the audience, hanging close to the sloping walls. Every surface within reach was covered in vivid graffiti. Straw littered the ground, trampled nearly to dust. Rows of cheap light bulbs were strung on bright orange cords, and more than a handful of them were flickering and threatening to burn out. The hot air reeked of sweat and bodies and a sweetness from the fields that didn't belong. Scarlett hadn't expected there to be so many people. There were well over 200 onlookers, and she didn't recognize any of them. This crowd wasn't from small-town Rieu. Likely many of them had come in from Toulouse. She spotted a number of piercings and tattoos and surgical manipulations. She passed a girl with hair dyed like a zebra's and a man on a leash being dragged around by a curvy escort droid. There were even cyborgs in the crowd, the rarity made stranger by the fact that none of them were hiding their cyborgness. They flaunted everything from polished metal arms to black reflected eyeballs that protruded eerily from their sockets. Scarlett did a double take when she passed a man showing off a small net screen implanted into his flexed bicep, laughing at the stiff news anchor inside it. The crowd roared suddenly, guttural and joyful. A man with the tattoo of a spine and a rib cage tracking down his back was left standing on the stage. Scarlett couldn't see his opponent beyond the dense crowd. She tucked her hands into the pockets of her hooded sweatshirt and continued her search of the unfamiliar faces, the strange fashions. She was drawing attention in her plain jeans with the ripped knees and ratty red sweatshirt that her grandma had given her years ago. Usually the hoodie was like camouflage in a town of equally careless dressers, but now she was dressed like a chameleon in a room full of Komodo dragons. Everywhere she turned, curious gazes followed her. With ruthless defiance, she glared back at them all and kept searching. She reached the back wall of the building, still stacked high with plastic and metal crates, without spotting Wolf. She backed herself into a corner for a better viewpoint and tugged the hood forward over her face. Her handgun dug into her hip. "You came." She jumped. Wolf had materialized out of the graffiti and was suddenly beside her, green eyes catching the dusty flickers of the light bulbs. "I'm sorry," he said, shuffling back half a step. "I didn't mean to startle you." Scarlet ignored the apology. In the shadows, she could just make out the edge of the tattoo on his arm, which had seemed so unimportant hours before, but was now burned into her memory. "The one who handed me the poker had a tattoo." Heat rushed to her face, the rage she'd buried in return for calm practicality rising to the surface. She closed the distance between them and thumped her locked fist into his sternum, ignoring how he towered a full head above her. Her hatred made her feel like she could crush his skull with her bare hands. "Where is she?" Wolf's expression was blank, his hands limp at his sides. "Who?" "My grandmother. What have you done with her?" He blinked, his expression at once confused and speculative, like she was speaking in another language that he was slow to translate. "Your grandmother?" Gritting her teeth, she slammed her fist harder into his chest. He flinched, but it seemed to be more from surprise than pain. "I know it was you. I know you took her, and you're keeping her somewhere. I know it was you who tortured my dad. I don't know what you're trying to prove, but I want her back, and I want her back now." He shot a furtive glance over her head. "I'm sorry. They're calling me to the stage." Pulse pounding against her temples, Scarlet simultaneously grabbed his left wrist and yanked out her gun. She pressed the barrel against his tattoo. "My dad saw your tattoo, despite your attempts to keep him drugged up. I find it unlikely that there are two identical tattoos like this, and that you happen to show up in my life the same day my dad's kidnappers let him go after a week of torturing him." His eyes momentarily cleared, but the look was followed by a deep frown, accentuating a pale scar on the side of his mouth. "Someone kidnapped your father and your grandmother," he said slowly. "Someone with a tattoo like mine, but they let your father go today?" "You think I'm an idiot?" she yelled. "Are you really going to try and convince me you had nothing to do with it?" Wolf peered up toward the stage again, and she tightened her grip on his wrist, but he made no move to walk away. "I've been at the Rio Tavern every day for weeks. Any of the waitstaff can vouch for that. And I've been here every night. Anyone will tell you so." Scarlet scowled. "Sorry if the people around here don't exactly seem like the trustworthy types." "They're not," he said. "But they do know me. Watch. You'll see." He tried to slip around her, but Scarlet turned with him, her hood slipping back. She dug her nails into his skin. "You're not leaving until you..." She paused, looking past Wolf at the crowd by the platform. Everyone was watching them, appreciative looks darting up and down Scarlet's body. A man on the platform was leaning against the ropes, smirking. He raised his eyebrows when he saw he'd caught Wolf's and Scarlet's attention. "Looks like the Wolf has found himself a tender morsel tonight," he said, his voice magnified by speakers somewhere overhead. A second man stood on the stage behind him, leering at Scarlet. He was twice the size and a foot taller than the one who had spoken, and entirely bald. His hair had been replaced with two rows of bear's teeth implanted like gaping jaws into his scalp. "Think I'll be taking that one home after I've destroyed Dog Boy's pretty face." The audience laughed at the taunts, making catcalls and whistling to one another. Someone nearby asked Wolf if he was afraid to test his luck. Unruffled, Wolf turned back to Scarlet. "He's undefeated," he said in an explanatory tone. "But so am I." Annoyed that he could think for a second she cared, Scarlet sucked in a furious breath. "I already calmed the police, and they'll be here any minute. If you just tell me where my grandmother is, you can leave. You can even warn your friends if you want. I won't shoot you, and I won't tell the police about you. Just tell me where she is, please." He peered down at her, calm despite the growing rowdiness of the crowd. They started chanting something, the words muffled by the blood flowing through Scarlet's ears. She thought for a second he was crumbling. He was going to tell her, and she would keep her word long enough to find her grandma and get her away from these monsters who had taken her. Then she would have his head. Once her grandma was safe at home, she would track him down and whoever else had helped him and make them pay for what they'd done. Perhaps he noticed the darkening bitterness on her face because he reached for her hand and gently pried up her fingers. On gut instinct, she dug the gun into his ribs, though she knew she wasn't going to shoot, not without answers. He didn't seem worried. Maybe he knew it too. "I believe your father did see a tattoo like mine." His head dipped toward her. "But it wasn't me." He pulled away. Scarlet dropped her arm, letting the gun hang limp at her side, and watched the chanting crowd part for him. The onlookers were intimidated, but also amused. Most were smiling and jostling one another. Some were moving through the crowds, scanning wrists, collecting bids. He may have been undefeated, but it seemed clear that most bets had been placed on his opponent. She squeezed the gun until the textured metal of the handle left an imprint on her palm. A tattoo like mine. What had he meant by that? He'd only been trying to confuse her, she determined as Wolf launched himself over the stage's ropes, agile as an acrobat. The coincidence was too much. No matter. She'd given him a chance, but the police would be here soon and take him into custody. She would get her answers one way or another. Shaking with frustration, she tucked the gun back into her waistband. The thrumming in her temples was beginning to mellow, and she could make out the crowds chanting now, "Hunter! Hunter! Hunter!" Dizzy from the heat and rush of adrenaline, she glanced toward the building's enormous opening, where she could see overgrown weeds and wheat stalks lit by the moon. She noticed a woman with close-cropped hair glaring at her like a jealous girlfriend. Scarlet returned the look before shifting her attention to the stage. Lingering at the back of the crowd, she pulled up her hood again, drawing her face beneath its shadows. The crowd surged forward, carrying Scarlet closer to the fight. Hunter had ripped off his shirt, displaying a mass of raw muscle as he rattled the crowd. The row of teeth embedded on his head glinted as he bowled from one side of the stage to the other. Wolf was tall, but he looked like a child next to Hunter. Nevertheless, he was all composure in his corner of the platform, radiating arrogance with one foot up on the ropes, practically lounging. Hunter ignored him, pacing back and forth like a caged animal, growling, cursing, working the crowd into a frenzy. "The one who handed me the poker." Scarlet's gut twisted. She needed Wolf. She needed answers. But in that moment, she wouldn't have minded seeing him ripped to shreds on that stage. As if sensing her onslaught of rage, Wolf's gaze flickered toward her. The smug amusement dropped away. Scarlet hoped it showed on her face just who she was now rooting for. A holograph flickered to life, hanging over the announcer's head. The words slowly rotated and flickered. Hunter, 341, versus Wolf, 11. "Tonight, our reigning, undefeated champion, Hunter!" cried the announcer. The crowd bellowed. "Takes on undefeated newcomer, Wolf!" Mixed boos and cheers. Evidently, not everyone had bent against him. Scarlet was hardly listening, straining hard at the holograph. Wolf, 11. 11 wins, she suspected. 11 fights. 11 nights? Her grandmother had been missing for 17 days and counting, but her father, hadn't he said they'd only kept him for a week? She frowned, frustrated from the calculations. Hunter yelled, "We're having Wolf for dinner tonight!" Hundreds of hands slapped against the edge of the platform like a roll of thunder. Wolf's concentration darkened into something thirsty, but patient. The holograph flashed bright red, then evaporated with the sound of a bellowing horn. The mediator dropped down into the crowd, and the fight began. Hunter threw the first punch. Scarlet gasped. The movement was almost too quick to follow, but Wolf ducked easily and skirted out from Hunter's shadow. Hunter was impressively fast for his bulk, but Wolf was faster. A series of blows were deflected until Hunter's fist finally connected with a sickening crunch. Scarlet recoiled. The crowd erupted, pushing and screaming against her. The frenzy was palpable, the crowd salivating for blood. Moving as if it were all choreographed, Wolf aimed a solid kick to Hunter's chest. A loud thud shook the ground as Hunter was knocked onto his back. He was only down for a moment before jumping to his feet. Wolf inched away, waiting. Blood was dribbling from his lips, but he didn't seem bothered by it. His eyes glowed. Hunter attacked with renewed vigor. Wolf took a punch in the stomach and crumpled over with a grunt. It was followed by a blow that sent him careening to the edge of the stage. He stumbled to one knee, but was up on his feet before Hunter could come closer. He shook his head in an oddly dog-like manner, wild hair flying, and then crouched with his big hands poised at his sides, staring at Hunter with that peculiar grin. Scarlet wrapped her fingers around her sweatshirt's zipper, wondering if that tick was how Wolf had gotten his nickname. When Hunter came barreling across the stage, Wolf lunged to his side and aimed a kick square in Hunter's back. Hunter collapsed to both knees. The crowd booed. A roundhouse kick, this one at Hunter's ear, sent him sprawling on his side. Hunter made to get up, but Wolf aimed for his ribs, sending him back onto the stage. The crowd was in a fervor, screeching and calling foul. Wolf stepped back, allowing Hunter time to pull himself up by the ropes and settle back into his fighting stance. There was a new glint in Wolf's eye, like he was enjoying this, and when his tongue darted out to lick the blood from his mouth, Scarlet grimaced. A raging bull, Hunter charged again. Wolf blocked one punch with his forearm, but took another in his side. Then his elbow shot out, catching Hunter in the jaw, and Scarlet knew he'd taken the hit intentionally. Hunter stumbled back. A heel in the chest nearly knocked him off his feet again. Wolf landed a punch to his nose, and a spurt of blood oozed down Hunter's chin. A knee in Hunter's side had him crouching over, groaning. Scarlet flinched with each blow, her stomach roiling. How people could stand to watch this, to enjoy this, baffled her. Hunter fell to his knees, and Wolf was behind him in a breath, his face violently contorted, his hands on each side of Hunter's head. "Handed me the poker, and this man, this monster, had her grandmother." Scarlet clamped both hands over her mouth, smothering the cry as her ears waited for the snap of Hunter's neck. Wolf froze and blinked at her. His eyes flickered, empty and mad one moment, then almost dazed, surprised to see her there. His pupils widened. Revulsion burned through Scarlet's nerves. She wanted to look away, wanted to run, but she was anchored to the ground. Then Wolf leaped back, letting Hunter slump to the stage under his own weight. The horn blared again. The crowd was a mixture of cheers and boos, delight and anger. Outright glee at seeing the great Hunter defeated. None of them minded the blind cruelty or the fact that they'd almost witnessed a murder. As the mediator climbed up onto the ropes to announce Wolf as the winner, Wolf peeled his focus away from Scarlet, shoved past the man, and hauled himself over the ropes. The crowd surged away from him, shoving Scarlet backward. She barely kept her balance as she was nearly crushed by the shuffling crowd. Wolf sprang up, using his hands and feet to propel him forward. Sprinting full speed, he disappeared through the yawning exit and dashed off into the silvery reeds. Red and blue flashed in the distance. The crowd swarmed, buzzing with confusion and curiosity. The muttered consensus seemed to be that Wolf was a new hero, but a savage one. It wasn't long before someone noticed the lights, and panic swept through them, people at first shouting defiant words against the police before rushing for the door and scattering across the abandoned farm. Scarlet was shaking as she pulled her hood up and fled with them. Not everyone was running. Someone behind her was trying to call order. There was a gunshot and mad laughter. Up ahead, the girl with the zebra hair was standing on a storage crate, pointing and laughing at the cowards who would flee from the police. Scarlet escaped into the midnight air, and the noise faded without the warehouse's echo around her. She could hear the sirens now, mixing with the thrum of crickets. On the dirt road outside the building, she spun in a full circle as the crowd jostled around her. There was no sign of Wolf. She thought she'd seen him turn right. Her ship was parked to the left. Her pulse was racing, making it hard to breathe. She couldn't leave. She hadn't gotten what she'd come for. She told herself that she would be able to find him again when she'd had time to gather her wits, after she talked to the detectives and persuaded them to track Wolf down and arrest him and find out where he'd taken her grandmother. Tucking her hands into her pockets, she hurried around the building toward her ship. A sickening howl stopped her, sucking the air out of her lungs. The night's chatter silenced, even the loitering city rats pausing to listen. Scarlet had heard wild wolves before, prowling the countryside in search of easy prey on the farms, but never had a wolf's howl sent a chill down her spine like that. Chapter 9. Ark! Get it off! Get it off! Cinder spun, steadying herself on the curved, slick concrete walls as she cast the flashlight behind her. Thorn was writhing and squirming in the cramped tunnel, swatting at his back and emitting an array of curses and unmanly shrieks. She sent the beam of light to the ceiling and saw a thriving mass of cockroaches scuttling across it in all directions. She shuddered but turned away and kept moving. "It's only a cockroach," she called back to him. "It's not going to kill you. It's in my uniform. Would you keep quiet? There's a manhole up ahead. Please tell me we're exiting through that manhole." She scoffed, more preoccupied with the map of the sewer system in her head than on her companion's squeamishness, even though the thought of a cockroach beneath her shirt did make her squirm. She figured it would still be preferable to walking through the ankle-deep sludge with one bare foot, and she wasn't whining. They passed beneath the manhole, and Cinder detected the steady sound of water growing louder. "We're almost to the combined main line," she said, at first eager to reach it. It was hot as Mars in this cramped tunnel, and her thighs were burning from the crouch walk routine, but then a gut-turning stench wafted toward her, so strong she almost gagged. No longer would it just be surface water runoff they were trekking through.
"Oh, aces," said Thorne, groaning. "Tell me that's not what I think it is."
Cinder wrinkled her nose and focused on taking shallow, burning breaths. The smell grew nearly unbearable as they traipsed through the sludge and came to the sewer connection, finding themselves on the lip of a concrete wall. Cinder's embedded flashlight searched the tunnel beneath them, darting up the slimy concrete walls. The main tunnel would be tall enough for them to stand in. The light bounced off a narrow metal grate that lined the far edge, stable enough for maintenance workers and covered in rat droppings. Between them and the grate, a river of sewage swelled and churned, at least 2 meters wide. She fought off another bout of nausea as the pungent stink of the sewer clouded her nostrils, her throat, her lungs. "Ready?" she said, inching forward.
"Wait, what are you doing?
What does it look like?" Thorne blinked at her, then down at the sewage he could barely make out in the darkness.
"Don't you have some tool in that fancy hand of yours that can get us across?"
Cinder glared, lightheaded from her body's instinctively short breaths.
"Oh, wow. How could I have forgotten about my grappling hook?"
Spinning away, she gobbled down another rank breath and lowered herself into the muck. Something smushed between her toes. The current pounded against her legs as she made her way across, the water up to her thighs. Writhing on the inside, Cinder crossed as quickly as she could, choking down her gag reflex, the weight of her metal foot keeping her grounded so the current didn't knock her off balance, and soon she was on the other side, pulling herself onto the grate. She flattened her back against the tunnel wall and peered back at the pretend captain. He was staring at her legs with unbridled disgust. Cinder looked down. The stark white jumper was now tinged greenish-brown and clung sopping to her legs.
"Look," she yelled, aiming the flashlight at Thorne. "You can either get over here or you can go back and serve the rest of your sentence in peace. But you have to make a decision now."
After a string of curses and spitting, Thorne inched his way into the sludge, holding his arms aloft. He was grimacing the whole time as he slinked his way to the grate and hauled himself up beside Cinder.
"This is what I get for complaining about the soap," he muttered, pressing himself against the wall.
The grate was already digging into Cinder's bare foot, and she shifted her weight onto her cyborg leg.
"All right, cadet, which way?"
"Captain." He opened his eyes and peered down the tunnel in each direction, but beyond the pale light filtering in from the closest manhole, the sewers disappeared in darkness. Cinder adjusted the brightness of her flashlight, sending it darting over the frothy surface of the water and dripping concrete walls.
"It's near the old Beihai Park," Thorne said, scratching at his whiskered chin.
"Which way is that?"
Cinder nodded and turned south. Her internal clock told her they'd been walking for only 12 minutes, but it seemed like hours. The grate dug into her foot with each step. Her wet pants were plastered to her calves, and sweat dripped down the back of her neck, sometimes tricking her into thinking it was a spider fallen down her jumpsuit and making her guilty for giving Thorne a hard time before. Though they didn't see any rats, she could hear them scurrying away from her light, down countless tunnels that fanned out beneath the city. Thorne talked to himself as they walked, working through his clogged memory. His ship was definitely near Beihai Park, in the industrial district, not 6 blocks south of the maglev tracks. Well, maybe 8 blocks.
"We're about a block away from the park," Cinder said, pausing at a metal ladder.
A spot of light drifted down toward them. This goes up to West Yungzin. Yungzin sounds familiar, sort of. She pleaded for patience and started to climb. The ladder rungs bit into her foot, but the air was blissfully fresh as she neared the top. The sound of the rushing water was replaced with the hum of the maglev tracks. Reaching the manhole cover, Cinder paused to listen for signs of humanity before pushing the cover off to the side. A hover glided overhead. Cinder ducked, heart racing. Daring to inch her head up, she spotted silent lights atop the white vehicle. It was an emergency hover. Visions of androids armed with brain interface overriding tasers sent a shudder through her before the hover turned a corner and she saw a red cross on one side. It was a medical hover, not law enforcement. Cinder nearly collapsed from relief. They were in the old warehouse district near the plague quarantines. Medical hovers were to be expected. She glanced both ways down the deserted street. Though it was still early, the day was already hot, and whimsical mirages were rising from the pavement, having forgotten the drenching summer storm from two nights before. Clear! She hauled herself up onto the road and sucked in a deep breath of the city's humidity. Thorn followed, his uniform glaringly bright in the sun, except for the legs, which were still murky green and smelled of sewage. Which way? Shielding his eyes with his forearm, Thorn squinted at the concrete buildings and rotated in a full circle. Face north, scratched his neck. Cinder's optimism crumbled. Tell me you recognize something. Yeah, I do, he said, waving her away. I just haven't been here in a while. Think faster. We aren't exactly blending in with our surroundings out here. With a nod, Thorn started down the street. This way. 5 steps later, he paused, pondered, turned around. No, this way. We're dead. No, I've got it now. It's this way. Don't you have an address? A captain always knows where his ship is. It's like a psychic bond. If only we had a captain here. He ignored her, marching down the street with spectacular confidence. Cinder followed 3 steps behind him, jumping at each sound. Trash skidding across the road, a hover crossing an intersection 2 streets away. The sun glistened off the dusty warehouse windows. 3 empty blocks later, Thorn slowed his pace and peered up at the facade of each building they passed, rubbing his chin. Cinder began desperately searching her brain for Plan B. There! Thorn jotted across the street to a warehouse that was identical to every other warehouse, with giant rolling doors and years of colorful graffiti. Rounding the building's corner, he tested the main door. Locked. Spotting the ID scanner beside the door, Cinder cursed. Figures. Kneeling down, she pried the plastic face off the scanner. I might be able to disable it. Do you think there's an alarm? There'd better be. I haven't been paying rent all this time for my darling to sit in an unprotected warehouse. Cinder had just downloaded the programming manual for the scanner's product number when the door beside them swung open and a plump man with a thin black goatee stepped out into the sunlight. Cinder froze. Carswell, the man barked. Just saw the news. I thought you might be showing up here. Alec, how are you? A grin broke across Thorne's face. Am I really on the news? How do I look? Without answering, Alec swerved his attention toward Cinder. His friendliness froze over, buried beneath a trace of discomfort. Gulping, Cinder shut the scanner's panel and stood. Her netlink was already connecting to the news feed she'd abandoned during their escape, and sure enough, there was a stream of warnings flashing across her own picture, the one they'd taken when she'd been admitted to the prison. Escaped convict, considered armed and dangerous. If seen, calm this link immediately. Seen you on the news, too.
Alec said, glancing at her steel foot. Alec, I'm here to pick up my ship. We're in a bit of a hurry. As sympathetic wrinkles creased the corners of Alec's mouth, he shook his head. I can't help you, Coswell. The feds watch me close enough as it is. Storing a stolen ship is one thing. I can always claim ignorance to that. But assisting a convicted felon and assisting one of them. His nose wrinkled at Cinder, but he simultaneously took a step back as if afraid of her retaliation. If they track you here and find out I helped, it's more trouble than even I can risk. You'd better just hang low for a time. I won't tell I saw you, but I won't let you take your ship. Not now. Not until all this blows over. You understand, right? Thorne flushed with disbelief. But she's my ship. I'm a paying customer. You can't just keep her from me. Each man for himself. You know it as well as anyone. Alec slid his gaze back toward Cinder, his fear easing more and more into revulsion. Get on your way now, and I won't calm the police. If they come around, I'll tell them I haven't seen you since you dropped off the ship last year. But if you stay here much longer, I'll calm them myself. I swear I will. No sooner had he finished speaking than Cinder heard a hover down the street. Her heart skipped at the sight of a white emergency hover, this one without the Red Cross on its side, but it disappeared down another street. She swung back toward Alec. We don't have anywhere else to go. We need that ship. He stepped back from her, his body framed in the doorway. Look here, little girl, he said, his tone determined despite the way his attention kept swooping down to her metal hand. I'm trying to help you out because Carswell's been a good customer of mine, and I won't rat out my customers, but it's no favor to you. I wouldn't blink twice before sending you off to rot. It's the best your kind deserved. Now get away from my warehouse before I change my mind. Desperation welled inside Cinder. She clenched her fists as a surge of electricity flashed out, blinding her. White-hot pain flared up from the base of her neck, flooding her skull, but it was blessedly brief and left bright spots sparking in her vision. Panting, she reeled back the burning energy, just in time to see Alec's eyes roll back. He toppled forward, landing in Thorne's arms. Cinder staggered against the wall, dizzy. Oh, stars! Is he dead? Thorne groaned from the weight. No, but I think he's having a heart attack. It's not a heart attack, she murmured. He'll be fine. She said it as much to convince herself as him, having to believe these accidental flares of her lunar gift weren't dangerous, that she wasn't becoming the terror to society that everyone believed her to be. Aces, he weighs a ton. Cinder grabbed Alec's feet, and together they dragged him into the building. An office to their left had two net screens, one with a security feed showing the warehouse's exterior just as the door closed behind two white-clad fugitives and the unconscious man. The other screen showed a muted news anchor. He may be a selfish jerk, but he sure does have good taste in jewelry. Thorne held up Alex Thien by the thumb, fiddling with a silver-plated band around his wrist, a miniature port watch. Would you focus? Cinder hauled Thorne to his feet. Turning, she scanned the massive warehouse. It stretched out the full length of the city block, filled with dozens of spaceships, large and small, new and old. Cargo ships, pod ships, personal flyers, race ships, ferries, cruisers. Which one is it? Hey, look, there was another jailbreak. Cinder glanced at the net screen, which now showed the chairman of National Security talking to a crowd of journalists. On the bottom of the screen scrolled the words, Lunar escapes from New Beijing prison, considered extremely dangerous. This is great, said Thorne, nearly knocking her over with a slap on her back.
They're not going to worry about us if they have a Lunar to track down.
Cinder dragged her attention away from the broadcast just as his grin fell.
Wait, you're Lunar? You're a criminal mastermind?
Spinning on her heels, she stalked into the warehouse.
Where is this ship?
Hold on there, little traitor. Breaking out of jail is one thing, but assisting a psychotic Lunar is a bit out of my league.
Cinder rounded on him.
First, I'm not psychotic. And second, if it wasn't for me, you would still be sitting in that jail cell, ogling your port screen, so you owe me. Besides, they've already got you pegged as my accomplice. You look like an idiot in that picture, by the way.
Thorne followed her gesture to the screen. His own jail picture was blown up beside hers.
I think I look pretty good.
Thorne, Captain, please.
He blinked at her, a touch of smugness wiped quickly away by a brisk nod.
Right, let's get out of here.
Cinder sighed in relief, following Thorne as he marched into the maze of ships.
I hope it's not the one in the middle.
Doesn't matter, he said, pointing up. The roof opens.
Cinder glanced up at the seam in the middle of the ceiling.
That's convenient.
And there she is.
Cinder followed Thorne's gesture. His ship was larger than she'd expected, much larger. A 214 Rampion, class 11.3, cargo ship.
Cinder pulled up her retina scanner and downloaded the ship's blueprint, speechless at everything it could claim. The engine room and a fully stocked dock with two satellite pod ships took up the underbelly, while the main level housed the cargo bay, cockpit, galley kitchen, six crew quarters, and a shared washroom. She rounded to the main entry hatch and saw that the seal of the American Republic had been hastily painted over with the silhouette of a lounging naked lady.
Nice touch.
Thanks. Did it myself.
Despite her worries that the painting could make them more easily identified, she couldn't help being faintly impressed.
It's bigger than I expected.
There was a time when she housed a 12-man crew, Thorne said, petting her hull.
Should be plenty of room for avoiding each other then.
Cinder paced beneath the hatch, waiting for Thorne to open it. But when she glanced back, she found him lovingly rubbing his temple against the ship's underside and cooing about how much he missed her.
Cinder was in the middle of rolling her eyes when an unfamiliar voice ricocheted through the warehouse.
Over here! Turning, she saw someone crouched over a lax body, haloed in a square of light. They wore the unmistakable uniform of the Eastern Commonwealth military.
Cinder swore,
"Time to go! Now!"
Thorne ducked toward the hatch.
"Rampion, code word, Captain is King. Open hatch."
They waited, but nothing happened.
Cinder raised panic eyebrows.
"Captain is King! Captain is King!
Rampion, wake up! It's Thorne! Captain Carswell Thorne! What the—"
Cinder shushed him. Beyond the ship's bulk, four men were making their way through the crowded warehouse, flashlights shining off the assorted landing gear.
"Maybe the power cell is dead," said Cinder.
"How? It's just been sitting here."
"Did you leave the headlights on?" she snapped.
Thorne harrumphed and crouched against the ship. Footsteps grew louder.
"Or it could be the auto control system," Cinder mused, racking her brain. She'd never worked on anything larger than a pod ship before, but how different could they be?
"Do you have the override key?"
He blinked at her.
"Yeah, let me pull it out of my prison-issued pocket, and we'll be on our way."
Cinder glared, but was silent as an officer passed two aisles away.
"Stay here," she whispered. "Keep trying to get in and take off as fast as possible."
"Where are you going?"
Without answering, she slinked around the side of the ship, a blueprint already streaming to her retina display. She found the access hatch and pried it open as quietly as she could before crawling up into the ship's undercarriage, contorting her body to avoid the wires and cables that crammed the space. She pulled the hatch shut behind her with a dull click and found herself encased in darkness. The second interior door was more difficult to break into, but between the flashlight and her screwdriver, she was soon wriggling out of the insulating layer and into the engine room. Her flashlight beam zipped across the massive engine. She found the computer motherboard on the blue lines overlaying her vision and squirmed toward it. Pulling the universal connector cable from her hand, she snapped it into the main computer terminal. Her flashlight dimmed as her own power was diverted. Pale green text crawled across her eyesight, diagnosing computer system model 135. Version 8.2, 5%, 12%, 16%. Chapter 10. Thorn jumped at a clang overhead. A man's voice followed. "Hear that?" Thorn crouched down between the ship's landing feet and flattened himself against a metal beam. "Captain is king," he whispered. "Captain is king. Captain is..." A subtle hum pulsed over his head. Pale running lights flickered on near the ship's nose. "Captain is..." Gears started to rattle before he could finish. The hatch opened, the ramp lowering onto the concrete. Heart leaping, Thorn dodged out beneath it, just in time to avoid being squashed. "Over there!" A flashlight beam fell over Thorn as he swung himself up onto the descending ramp. "Rampian, close hatch!" The ship didn't respond. A gun fired. The bullet pinged off the ship's overhead light. Thorn ducked behind one of the plastic crates that filled the cargo bay. "Rampian, close hatch! I'm working on it!" He froze, glancing up at the pipes and tubes that lined the ship's ceiling. "Rampian?" The following silence was punctuated by the clang of the ramp on the outside concrete, the thumping of booted feet. Then the ramp creaked again and started to rise back up. A shower of bullets lodged into the plastic storage crates, pinging off the metal walls. Thorn covered his head and waited until the ramp was closed enough to block the bullet's path before shoving himself away from the crate and running toward the cockpit. The ship vibrated as the ramp slammed shut. A volley of bullets pinged against the hull. Thorn scrambled toward the emergency lights that framed the cockpit, shoving aside unopened crates. His knee smacked something hard, and he let out a string of curses as he collapsed into the pilot seat. The windows were dirty, and all he could see in the dark warehouse were the faint lights of Alak's office and the flashlight beams darting around the Rampian, searching for another way in. "Rampian! Ready for liftoff!" The dash lit up with controls and screens, only the most important one. The same sterile feminine voice came over the ship's speakers. "Thorn, I can't set the automatic lift. You're going to have to take off manually." He gaped at the controls. "Why is my ship talking back to me?" "It's me, you idiot!" He cocked his head toward the speaker. "Cinder, listen. The auto control system has a bug. The power cell is on the Fritz, too. I think it can make it, but you're going to have to take off without computer assistance." The words, too dry in the computer's tone, were punctuated by another round of bullets against the ship's closed hatch. Thorn gulped. "Without computer assistance? Are you sure?" A short silence was followed by the voice again, and Thorn thought he could detect Cinder's screeching despite its monotone. "You know how to fly, right?" Thorn scanned the controls before him. "Yes?" He squared his shoulders and reached for the controller that was attached to the ceiling. A moment later, a slash of sunlight cut across the warehouse as the roof opened down the middle. Something pounded against the ship's side. Yeah, I hear you." Thorn jabbed the ignition. The lights across the dash dimmed as the engine thrummed to life. "Here we go." Another crash echoed from outside the hatch. He jogged a few switches, engaging hover mode, and eased the ship off the ground. She rose up smoothly, the magnets beneath the city pushing the ship easily as a dandelion seed. And Thorn exhaled a long breath. Then the ship warbled and began to tilt. "Whoa, whoa, whoa, don't do that!" Thorn's pulse raced as he leveled the ship. "The power cell is going to die. You have to engage the backup thrusters." "Engage the backup what? Oh, never mind, I found them." The engine flared again. With a sudden jolt of power, the ship lurched to the opposite side, and Thorn heard a crunch as she rammed into the next ship. The Rampian shuddered and started to slip back toward the ground. Another rainfall of bullets beat against the starboard side. A drop of sweat slid down Thorn's back. "What are you doing up there? Stop distracting me," he yelled, gripping the controls and righting the ship. Overcompensated, the ship tilted too far to the right. "We're going to die. This isn't as easy as it looks." Thorn leveled her out again. "I usually have an automated stabilizer to take care of this." To his surprise, no sarcastic comment was spat back at him. A moment later, another panel lit up. "Magnetic conductor stabilizing. Power output 37/63, 37/62, 42/58. The ship settled calmly beneath him, once again trembling in midair. "Right, like that." Thorn's knuckles whitened on the controls as he arched the ship's nose up toward the open roof. The engine's purr became a roar as the ship soared upward. He heard the last ricochet of bullets, and then they fell away as the ship broke free of the warehouse and was flooded with the light from the yellow sun. "Come on, darling," he murmured, squeezing his eyes shut as, without resistance, without wavering, the ship left the protective magnetic field of the city behind, drew on the full power of her thrusters, and speared through the wispy clouds that lingered in the morning light. The towering skyscrapers of downtown New Beijing dropped away, and then it was only him and the sky and the endless landscape of space. Thorn's fingers stayed clamped like iron shackles around the controls until the ship had erupted from Earth's atmosphere. Lightheaded, he adjusted the thruster output as the ship slipped into natural orbit before prying his hands away from the controls. He slumped, shaking, back in the chair. It took him a long time to speak, waiting for his heartbeat to slow to a manageable pace. "Good girl, cyborg girl," he said. "If you were hoping for a permanent position on my crew, you're hired." The speakers were silent. "I don't mean a lowly position either. First mate is available. Well, I mean, pretty much every position is available. Mechanic? Cook? A pilot would be nice, so I don't have to go through that again." He waited. "Cinder, are you there?" When still there was no response, he pushed himself out of his chair and stumbled out of the cockpit, past the cargo bay, and into the corridor that split off to the crew's quarters. His legs were weak as he reached for the hatch that led into the ship's lower levels. He clomped down the ladder into the tiny hall between the engine room and the pod ship dock. The screen beside the engine room didn't offer any warnings of space vacuums or unsafe compressions. It also didn't say anything about a living girl inside. Thorn tapped the unlock icon on the screen and twisted the door's manual bolt, and then shoved the door open. The engine was loud and hot and smelled like melted rubber. "Hello?" he called into the dark. "Cyborg girl? Are you in here?" If she responded, the words were lost in the engine's thrumming. Thorn gulped. "Lights on?" A red emergency light brightened above the doorway, casting gloomy shadows over the enormous revolving engine and the masses of cords and coils that sprawled out beneath it. Thorn squinted, spotting something almost white. Sinking to his hands and knees, he crawled towards her. "Cyborg girl?" She didn't move. As Thorn came closer, he saw that she was on her back, dark hair sprawled across her face. Her robotic hand was plugged into the port of an exposed computer panel. "Hey, you," he said, hovering over her. He peeled up her eyelids, but her gaze was dark and empty. Craning down, Thorn placed an ear against her chest, but if there was a heartbeat, it was drowned out by the roaring engine.